This episode is brought to you by my friend Rebecca Walser, a financial expert who can help you protect your wealth. Book your free call with her team by going to friendofdinesh.com. That's friendofdinesh.com. Coming up, I'm going to talk about the march of leftism across Latin America and how the Chileans have pulled back from going over the abyss. Evangelist and activist Bevelyn Beatty joins me. Bevelyn Beatty Williams, we're going to talk about how to be an effective community organizer on our side. Like the French policeman in Casablanca, I am shocked to find out that people are stealing from BLM. And a January 6th defendant's wife joins me. We're going to speak about the mistreatment of her husband and mistreatment in general. This is the Dinesh D'Souza Show.
Needs this voice. The times are crazy. In a time of confusion, division, and lies, we need a brave voice of reason, understanding, and truth. This is the Dinesh D'Souza Podcast.
I want to talk about the march of leftism across South America. Very troubling development, and we've seen it happen in recent months and in recent years. Now, of course, we know a lot about Venezuela. I talk about it on the podcast. Debbie, of course, talks about it a lot as well. But a number of other countries, Colombia, Ecuador, Peru, even Chile. And Chile was kind of the most unkindest cut of all. And what I mean by that is that Chile has actually enjoyed an economic boom because of capitalism, because of free market policies. In fact, free market policies put into effect with the advice of American economists like Milton Friedman. And going back almost 50 years or more now, Chile created a pension system that produced a decent provision for people as they got into old age. Again, it was a pension system not like America's Social Security plan, but a pension system that's invested in the market. And as the market went up, people saw their fortunes become a lot more comfortable and be able to provide for them when they needed it. And here Chile, of all places, pivoted to the left by electing a real far leftist, in fact, somebody who has in the past been associated with communism, a guy named Gabriel Boric, an activist who came marching in, promised a kind of new Chile. In fact, said that he was going to rewrite the Chilean constitution. He says the constitution was put into effect under a dictator, Augusto Pinochet. We're going to redo the whole constitution. There was a referendum in 2020 and a majority, in fact, a decisive majority of Chileans voted, yes, we do need a new constitution. But this guy, Boric, thought that what the Chileans meant is that they wanted a new far leftist constitution, taking the entire leftist kind of wish list and sticking it right in the constitution. So it actually would be the supreme law of Chile. This, by the way, generated tremendous excitement in America because you have Bernie Sanders endorsing the proposed Chilean constitution, and the New York Times was on board. But the Chileans had a vote, and the constitution was decisively defeated. Defeated, in fact, 63-37%. Now, as with a lot of polls, right till the end, the left was like, this is really close. This is a real referendum on Gabriel Boric. Yeah, it is a referendum on him, but basically it's a 2-1 thrashing that this proposed constitution took. And what this means, basically, is it's really back to the drawing board. Now, across the world, the left is up in arms, and they're acting like these Chileans are really dumb. They don't really know what's good for them. Here's Al Jazeera. The Constitution, if approved, will guarantee adequate housing rights, a national health care system, enhanced employment benefits. State bodies and public companies must adhere to gender parity. So to the left, it's like, what's not to like? This should get 90% support. Pretty much the same tone was taken by the New York Times. The New York Times goes, breaking news. I laughed when I read this. Voters in Chile rejected a sweeping left-leaning So not leftist, but left-leaning. What the communists want to do is left-leaning. What somebody who's right-leaning is far-right. This is New York Times nomenclature. It's worth being onto it. Anyway, voters in Chile rejected a sweeping left-leaning constitution that would have guaranteed a record number of rights. So again, for the New York Times, who would be against getting a record number of rights? And then, in fact, a later article on the same topic. The rejected constitution would have legalized abortion, adopted universal health care, and enshrined more than 100 constitutional rights, a global record.
Sounds like the Democrats.
This sounds like the Democrats here. We're enshrining 100 constitutional rights. Oh, wow, here's another leftist country. They're enshrining 500 constitutional rights. Who could be against 500? How about 1,000 the next time? You basically have a right not to be fearful, a right not to be grumpy. So this is how these people are. They don't operate in the real world. They seem to think that there's no intellectual alternative to their worldview. And continuing on with the proposed Chilean constitution, there was a whole chapter on environmental rights. Apparently, quote, nature has rights. So, you know, the American Constitution, all men are created equal and are granted by their creator inalienable rights. These are rights for human beings. But no, according to the Chilean Constitution, the rights for animals, nature has rights, and indigenous groups have rights. They have the right to their lands and territories, and they have their own parallel justice system. So if an indigenous guy goes and murders somebody else, no, they can't be tried in the normal Chilean court. They've got to have their own court. So if you looked at the articles before the vote, it sounded like this is going to go through. This is the greatest. Here is, again, Al Jazeera. It's only, quote, far right-wing figures like 2021 presidential candidate Jose Antonio Kast are campaigning against this proposed constitution, but all the good people, including former Chilean President Michelle Bachelet, who was, by the way, also a UN human rights chief, she was championing this new constitution. But down it goes to a 2-1 defeat, and I think it's a very narrow sort of salvation for Chile. It's not the end of the fight. They're going to try to redraft this constitution, probably be a little more cunning about it. But for now, I would say Chile, although making a horrible mistake in my view by voting for this idiotic leftist Gabriel Boric, has nevertheless, in shutting down this new proposed constitution, averted the precipice. MyPillow is having their biggest sheet sale of the year. You all have helped build MyPillow into the amazing company it is today. And now Mike Lindell, the inventor and CEO, wants to give back exclusively to his supporters. That's you. The Percale and Giza Dream bed sheets are available in a variety of colors and sizes. They're all on sale for as low as $29.98 with promo code Dinesh. Order now, because when they're gone, they're gone. The Percale and Giza Dream Sheets are breathable. They have a cool, crisp feel. They come with a 10-year warranty, 60-day money-back guarantee. So don't miss out on this incredible offer. Limited supply, so order now. Call 800-876-0227. That's 800-876-0227. Or go to MyPillow.com to get the discount. You need to use promo code D-I-N-E-S-H, Dinesh. Guys, I'm really happy to welcome to the podcast Bevelyn Beatty Williams. She's a Christian evangelist, a political activist, co-founder of the At the Well Ministry. She thinks of herself as an apostle, and she really came to public limelight with her remarkable sort of activist response to Black Lives Matter, painting over the BLM street mural in New York City. Bevelyn, delighted to have you on the podcast. Thanks for joining me. I remember that great scene where you've got this huge Black Lives Matter thing on the pavement, and there you are, right in the middle of these activists, and you're painting over their stuff. I think there's probably very few people who would dare to do that. And I wanted to ask you, what gave you the idea to sort of take it to that level and go, you know, in your face with those guys?
For me, the biggest thing for me was the silence of the church. I felt like, you know, before COVID and all of this stuff happened, I had all of these like spiritual leaders that I just listened to and I believed in, and I smelled the lie. So I just thought, you know, clearly they're going to smell the lie. They're going to call this thing out. until one day I'm watching CBN and I'm seeing, okay, well, you know, white pastors are washing black pastors' feet as a form of reconciling. And I'm like, wait a minute, this was reconciled on the cross. So I felt like BLM was so clear about their agenda and how demonic it was. But I felt like the church was vague. It almost silent in a sense, and trying to pacify this political group. So I'm just like, you know what? We have individuals that look like me in the streets dying right now, and they're dying because people have bitten the bait of defunding the police. Where in certain communities, like the one I grew up in, you actually need the police. So now we're paying dire consequences for BLM's propaganda. So I'm like, you know what? I'm done. I am going to, they want to be so, I'll say graphic and so vulgar and put BLM right in front of, on Fifth Avenue, right in front of Trump Tower. They knew what they were doing. And I'm like, they're utilizing my color to push their communist agenda. So no, I'm going to be, the black woman is going to get up and stand up and now counter that.
I mean, Bevelyn, it is downright amazing. I mean, I think the premise of what you're saying is that there are a lot of people who were hoodwinked by Black Lives Matter, by the kind of innocence of the name Black Lives Matter. And so you got a lot of white pastors, as you say, who basically said, you know, we need some Christian middle ground with these guys. We need to make peace with them. In a sense, we need to side with them. But I think what you're saying is this is a Marxist communist organization that stands for things antithetical to the church. So let me ask you, how did you discover this? Did you just go read their materials? How did you recognize that this is a group that, far from being really about Black Lives Matter, has a very different agenda?
Well, I mean, you went on their website and they told you straight up who they were. And this is before I even knew that the founding women were witches and lesbians. I didn't even know that part. But you go on their website and they're telling you they're against the nuclear family and they want, you know, LGBTQ rights and they want all of this stuff. And it's just like, wait a minute, they want their abortions on demand, free. I'm like, wait a minute, where does the black narrative fit in when we know right now, black babies are being more aborted than born in New York alone, right? We know that fatherlessness is one of the biggest issues in the black community, but yet they're against the nuclear family. And we also know we're not going to surrender to no LGBTQ cause. I mean, especially the black community, we were never supposed to be for that. Unfortunately, we had a president, Barack, who ushered that in using his color. But prior to that, black people were not for that. So I'm just like, how is this helping the black narrative? It's not. So this is a direct lie, and they're blatant about it, you know?
I mean, part of what you're saying, Bevelyn, which I think is very interesting and important, is that, you know, you had the original civil rights movement, and it was able to appeal to a long history of slavery and segregation and make its case morally against all of that. And then you had other groups that kind of came along, LGBTQ being a perfect example, that kind of piggybacked on the civil rights movement.
Yes.
And acted as if it had the same, this was the same thing. And I think what you're saying is most black people recognize it's not the same thing.
Yeah, I feel like, well, I hate to say it, but not most. I think the ones who didn't sip the Kool-Aid, but unfortunately in the black community, our color has become our God. But as I said in the documentary, American Woman with Your Wife, black didn't go on the cross for me. Jesus did. And I know that the scriptures say in the body of Christ, there is no Jew, Gentile, male, nor female. We're all working as one. So if you would think, okay, this narrative is heading towards our demise, but no, a lot of black folk didn't get it. And they felt like, yeah, you know, I feel special. BLM is painted on the street. Wow. And I'm just like, you don't get how much of a mockery this makes us. They've given our community welfare, and we are literally, you're looking at a third world country within a first world country. When you look at the welfare system, if you want to know what socialism looks like, look at the black community. Look at what Lyndon Baines Johnson and the Democratic Party implemented for us to be where we're at. And that should let you know, okay, they use the blacks as a test, you know, a test dummy, but this is what they want for the entire nation. So if anything, you should be running far away from what we have experienced, yet it's all about color. So it's smoke and mirrors. If I could just look at you and say, hey, okay, yeah, he doesn't like me because I'm black. I could be loud. I could be ignorant. I could be arrogant. But no, if I just leave everything at surface, we never get to the root of the issue and get a real solution.
Let's take a pause. We'll be right back with Bevelyn Beatty Williams. Some of us wish we could rewind the clock when it comes to our health. Exercising, climbing stairs, all the things young people take for granted, these aren't things that have to stop just because you age. Neither do you have to suffer and endure the normal aging aches and pains. Now there's a 100% drug-free solution. It's called Relief Factor. Relief Factor supports your body's fight against inflammation. That's the source of aches and pains. The vast majority of people who try Relief Factor love it. They order more because it works for them. Debbie's a true believer. She finally gets to do her bar exercise class now that she's alleviated her frozen shoulder thanks to Relief Factor. Debbie can even do planks, push-ups. She's like, wow, I never want to be without it again. You too can benefit. Try it for yourself. Order the 3-week quick start for the discounted price of just $19.95. Go to relieffactor.com or call 833-690-7246 to find out more about this offer. That number again, 833-690-7246, or go to relieffactor.com. Feel the difference. I'm back with a Christian evangelist, political activist, actually self-described apostle, Bevelyn Beatty Williams. Bevelyn, let me begin by asking you about that. You know, that's a little bit of a startling word, apostle. Talk about why you think of yourself as an apostle, and talk about what it means to be an apostle, you know, in the 21st century.
Well, if you want to be technical, every single one of us technically are supposed to hold some type of office of apostle. You know, you can be apostle in your own home. You can apostle your children by raising them in a different way than the way your parents did. Dinesh, with your movies, you are taking a head apostleship position to do these films and to expose the truth. But yet you never leave out the light of God. This is something that hasn't been done before. So you're technically being a pioneer and you're bringing the kingdom to light. That's all that apostle is. You're building something that's allowing other saints to follow and maintain it even further, right? So the Great Commission automatically puts you into apostleship. Now, you still have your gifts of prophecy and teaching and evangelism and all of that, but all of it works together for the body to bring the truth, even with the prophetic. The prophetic doesn't mean you just know the future. The prophetic is the mouth of God. So when you get up and you speak the scripture, you speak the word of God, you're prophesying. You know what I mean? We've made these positions seem more than what they really are, but all of it's, you stay humble, you stay grounded, you don't think too highly of yourself, right? But at the same time, the reason why I'm owning that title is because I'm owning my position as a Christian who's not sitting on their butt and warming their hands. And I'm not going to sit on my hands and just allow our nation to go crumbling to the ground. We, the Christians, are supposed to have a voice. What we fail to realize is we are political, whether we like it or not. Our God has given us laws that we as Christians are supposed to live by and are supposed to speak on and enforce in our own nation, whether it's in America or Timbuktu. Right. So now when we say, OK, we don't want to be political, we don't want to get involved. We are going against a direct mandate, and we are also depriving ourselves of our position as the ecclesia. The ecclesia are the people who gather together and they talk about foreign policy. What is our foreign policy? Kingdom policy, heaven policy, on earth as it is in heaven, right? We talk about what's going on in the nation, how is God prevailing, and all of these things that oppose God, we are supposed to speak against. That's BLM, that's gay marriage, that's abortion, that's fornication, that's lying, stealing, swindling, murder, all of these things. We're supposed to speak out against that. Socialism. Socialism is antichrist, 100%, right? So when a Christian does not make their voice known, and they sit in the church and they say, hey, I am not going to bother. I'm going to focus on my congregation. It is absolutely the most selfish thing you can do. We have two missions. We have a submission, which is a wife honoring her husband, a husband loving his wife. right? Honoring your mother and father, these intricate details of being a Christian, those are the submission once you become a Christian. But the great mission is to go out into all the world and preach the gospel to all the nations that they may be converted. Now, the issue is Satan is doing his job. He wants to bring communism and socialism because it puts him in domination. It puts him in rule. So he's going out into all the world. He's getting into your kids' schools. He's getting into your government seats, and he's doing his work while we're sitting in our pews and just collecting tithes. That doesn't make sense.
I mean, part of what you're saying, Bevelyn, is that there actually has been a really glorious tradition of activism in the black church. Now, these yes. days, it seems to incline to the left. But I think what you're saying is not just in the black church, but in the church generally, we need across activism the board. On the other side in defense of core Christian principles.
That's right. That's right. I'm not going to, for me personally, I'm black, and I will use that as a tool to confine the wise. But more than anything, I'm a Christian. You're Indian. You're not going to use your background to be all that you stand for. At the end of the day, you're a Christian. Your wife is Venezuelan. She's not going to use all of her Spanish culture to just say, okay, it's all about Spanish. No, it's about God. It's about Jesus. That is the meat of the day. And I believe us blacks, we've gotten distracted. We've gotten distracted. And now in that, we've pushed civil rights, right? And of course, it was a beautiful thing, all right? But I honestly believe it was the worst thing that ever happened to the black community. We started knocking on the government's door, asking them to accept us. And the reality is, segregation and all of that was not in the whole of America. It was only in the South. Let's not forget, in the North, it was totally different, right? You have some blacks that were never, their ancestors were never slaves. And I mean, Philadelphia, that was where you went to have freedom. Harriet Tubman left from Maryland, 100 miles up. She's in Philly, she's free. Right? So we're not looking at the whole of the matter. The reality is, my color did not go on the cross for me. We have kingdom work to do. But if we continue to focus on color, it's going to hinder us from the Great Commission, which is going against the kingdom of darkness, which unfortunately right now in this nation is prevailing. The spirit of death upon this nation, I've never seen anything like this before. And we're paying the price because of our silence and our complacency.
Bevelyn, that's a really powerful message, and I'd love to have you back. Thank you for coming on. And folks, check her out on Instagram, at Mrs. Bevelyn Williams. On Facebook, just Bevelyn Williams. YouTube, Bevelyn Williams. Bevelyn Beatty Williams, thank you for joining me. Appreciate it.
Thank you. God bless you.
Are you watching your retirement slip through your hands every day? Are you worried about a black swan event that could be coming? This is an event that comes out of nowhere and basically decimates your accumulated savings. That's not all. Interest rates going up, inflation skyrocketing. How can we protect our money? How can you get ahead of what's happening with the economy? Well, this is not a time to wing it or go with a hunch. You need a qualified expert on your side. Well, I'm not that expert, but my friend Rebecca Walser is. She's a tax attorney and wealth strategist with her MBA from the London School of Economics. Rebecca and her team will help to prepare you and your money for the turbulent times ahead. We all work hard for our money. We can use some really good guidance to help us build on what we have. Go to friendofdinesh.com, book your complimentary introductory call today to see if you qualify. That's friendofdinesh.com. Let Rebecca Walser's team of experts protect your wealth during these unprecedented times. In my interview with Bevelyn Beatty Williams, which you just heard, we talked a little bit about Black Lives Matter. And there's a very amusing controversy involving Black Lives Matter and involves a guy, one of the founders of Black Lives Matter, stealing from Black Lives Matter. So this guy, and I got to say a little bit of a tribute to him because he's kind of ingenious in the way he defends his thievery. And we'll come to that. Basically, his argument is that I'm a thief, but I'm stealing from an organization based on thievery. And moreover, he says, you know, these are people who have basically said the justice system is racist, and they basically said the cops are racist, and they've said essentially that a black man can get a free, fair trial in America. Now they're trying to go after me and do what? Put me into court, accuse me of thievery, appeal to the courts, appeal to the justice system. He goes, I learned from them that the justice system can't be trusted, so I can't be tried in that kind of a system. So I love this, because here's a guy, basically, it's sort of like one of the crooks calling out these crooked principles and saying, didn't we all agree that we're crooks? Didn't we all agree that we don't live by the law? If you're an outlaw organization, why don't you tolerate an outlaw like me within the organization? So this is Shalomayim Bowers. He's being accused. By the way, he's not being accused by some white cop or some white prosecutor. He's being accused by Black Lives Matter activists around the country of stealing from Black Lives Matter. Now, we all know that Black Lives Matter is a major shakedown operation. Patricia Cullors, one of the founders of Black Lives Matter, was helping herself to Black Lives Matter resources, buying real estate here and there, living high on the hog. So I'm sure this guy is hardly alone. What seems to distinguish him is the magnitude of his stealing. $10 million. He's accused of basically, quote, creating a, quote, personal piggy bank. This is from the lawsuit, a lawsuit that has been filed by a group called Black Lives Matter Grassroots. So Black Lives Matter Grassroots is basically Black Lives Matter guys, apparently, at the local level, and they say that we set up this organization, we meant well, we did all this fundraising, this guy's taken it over. And apparently what he's done is he has sort of ingeniously shut out a lot of the other Black Lives Matter activists out of the organization. It says here, I'm now reading from the LA Times, the lawsuit was announced at the news conference hosted by Black Lives Matter Los Angeles co-founder Melina Abdullah, who says that Bowers, this is Shalomia Bowers, shut her and other leaders of BLM out of their social media accounts by changing the passwords. So this is fantastic. Here you've got an organization, you know, the crooks have turned on each other, not for the first time. I mean, this has happened with the mafia. It happens with all kinds of groups. And here's an organization with a lot of cash to steal. I mean, $10 million is a lot of money, but Black Lives Matter has taken in $90 million in donations, a lot of it from corporations. So all these corporations are paying shakedown money, or they're paying guilt money. And my view of it is, if it's being stolen, serve them right. I'm actually glad it's being stolen. Probably the best use you could put to it, by the way. You don't want Black Lives Matter to be putting this into political activism, which would obviously be disruptive. So if Shalomia Bowers is, buying a Rolls Royce and living in a penthouse apartment, I say this is about as good a use of that money as I can expect. But what I like best is his defense of his actions. And that is, he basically says, I'm now quoting him, he says, he's blasting these groups suing him for, quote, falling victim to the social violence that fuels the legal system. So in other words, you can't take me to court. You said that the legal system is based on violence. Now you're appealing to that exact same violent legal system to get me. No can do, based on your own principles. And then he goes on to say, quote, they would rather take the same steps of our white oppressors and utilize the criminal legal system, which is propped up by white supremacy, the same system they say they want to dismantle. I mean, this is impeccable logic, because the guy is basically saying either you trust the system and you say that the system operates according to neutral principles, or you don't. If you're saying this is a system that by and large is a stand-in for slavery, for segregation, for white supremacy, it's essentially a black oppression machine, how can you then demand that that same machine adjudicate my case fairly? So by and large, you have a hustler who is stealing from a hustling organization and stealing the money that that organization hustled. He's making the point that he can't be tried in any kind of a normal court because the organization itself claims that the courts are racist, and so applying their own logic to them, they have no right to try him. In short, the guy says that he has every right to keep the cash that he took, if he took any. He has every right to buy the Rolls Royce. He has every right to live in the penthouse apartment. Because after all, and perhaps he could make this point, which he hasn't made, but I would make on his behalf, and that is everybody knew from the beginning that Black Lives Matter was a shakedown. Most people knew and most people didn't even care. And so now when a shakedown artist turns up and his pockets are full of cash, it's a little bit hypocritical, a little bit difficult to go, you're doing a shakedown, when the whole organization is based on a shakedown. The AARP is rallying behind the new tax and spend bill, promising members it will reduce inflation, bring relief from big pharma. Nah. In reality, it will devastate the 65-plus crowd financially and medically. Now, AMAC knows the truth. AMAC is the Association of Mature American Citizens. It advocates for its members. You will never find them in anyone's back pocket. I trust AMAC. They're honest. They fight for your conservative values. Join AMAC today, like Debbie and I have. AMAC offers special discounts and benefits, plus they provide access to financial and insurance counseling services. For only $16 a year, you can join AMAC. Go to amac.us/Dinesh to start enjoying benefits. Anyone can join, but if you're a senior, what are you waiting for? Don't let the AARP misrepresent and mislead you. Join AMAC today. AMAC serves its members with integrity and compassion. Join or renew today at amac.us/Dinesh. That's AMAC, AMAC.us/Dinesh. Guys, as you know, I've tried to stay really on top of the January 6th story, a story that so many people are downplaying or ignoring. I'm delighted to welcome to the podcast Sarah McCabe, who's the wife of Ronald Colton McCabe, a sheriff deputy in Tennessee who attended the January 6th rally in D.C. Sarah is an advocate for January 6th political prisoners. Sarah, welcome to the podcast. This is something that Debbie and I both are horrified about. And I just want to ask you, as a January 6th wife, what's it like going through this kind of craziness? Do you feel like you're living in a surreal America? Talk a little bit just about what it's been like from your perspective.
Absolutely. Well, thank you for having me on. Just a little bit of background on my husband. He was a sheriff's deputy for 7 years prior to this. He was an all-star athlete in high school and college, grew up in East Tennessee. In 2018, he actually won a life-saving award for helping save an inmate's life. He was a correctional officer. And that, to me, just says everything about what happened to him on January 6th. He rushed into action to help those around him. Being a wife of this, I was a law enforcement officer wife for 7 years. So back in the summer of love is what we call it of 2020, my husband actually was in Atlanta and helped with the riots of that. And so it completely is switched. He has now been on the other side of the wall. Today makes 386 days that he's been gone. The FBI came and raided our house and arrested him. And since then, my life, honestly, it's hard to understand if you're not in the day to day. It's pretty much been in shambles. You know, it's like how can we've come together as a group, the January 6th families, and we're willing to fight for our loved ones. You know, what the treatment that they receive in there is just next to none. I have not seen my husband in 386 days.
And is that because they won't let you see him? Is he shut off from visits? And what is the justification for that?
Because they still have COVID mandates in D.C. and because of vaccination status, they're not allowed to see their loved ones.
I mean, I can tell as we talk that you're kind of holding back emotion. And I think you're also alluding to the sort of shocking double standard of people who were assaulting cops, setting things on fire, pulling people out of their cars, beating them up. And these are people who were, the law basically treated them as misguided or not even misguided, idealists who should be treated very gently, and contrast this with the brutality of the treatment of the January 6th defendants. What are the charges that your husband, Ronald Colton, is facing, and how do you think about that?
He has, I believe he has 7 felony charges as well as misdemeanors. His story is next to none. It's kind of crazy. I can't go into the details about it, but the same evidence that the Department of Justice is charging him with exonerates him. If they would ever turn on the audio and they would hear his conversations between him and other police officers, you're like, why is this man still sitting in jail? He should have all charges dropped against him.
So what you're really saying is that, and I think this is generally true about January 6th, is that the government seems to be selectively using the video to make its points while not releasing all of the video and all of the audio. I mean, every inch of the Capitol is under surveillance. So they have the audio, they have the video. And it seems like what they're doing is they're letting the judges and the jury see what they want them to see. And that's not really justice, is it?
No, absolutely not. And his judge has already admitted his guilt before he's even gone before a trial. His judge has called him a terrorist.
Very shocking. Let's take a short pause. When we come back, I want to talk about a specific incident affecting your husband in confinement and that gets to the issue of mistreatment of prisoners, really political prisoners. We'll be right back. Uncle Tom 2 is the eye-opening documentary everyone in America should see. It offers a compelling and brave analysis of the true history of Black America, the cultural shift from prosperity, integrity, and faith to its current perceived state of anger, discontent, and victimhood. Uncle Tom 2 offers historical footage, photos, correspondence, and data to reveal the genuine strides of Black America in the 20th century, the deliberate Marxist strategy to create racial tension and replace God with government, the NAACP's sinister agenda, the fall of Black Harlem, the truth behind Black Lives Matter, and the demoralization of America for political power. Don't miss Uncle Tom 2 from executive producer Larry Elder and director Justin Malone with Brandon Tatum, Vodi Bakum, and Chad O. Jackson. Watch the movie on demand or buy the DVD now at salemnow.com. That's S-A-L-E-M. That's salemnow.com. I'm back with January 6th wife, Sarah McCabe, an advocate for January 6th political prisoners, the wife of Ronald Colton McCabe. Sarah, you wrote a letter, kind of an open letter, dated September 6th, in which you talk about a kind of a disturbing incident involving your husband in the prison. Which seems just so, to me, so arbitrary and so ridiculous. But I want people to understand that this is the kind of thing that is happening to him, but it's also probably happening in other ways to other people. So let's go through this incident slowly and spell it out so people understand what exactly happened to your husband in prison.
Yes. This incident happened on Labor Day, September the 5th, at around, I'm in Central Time, so 10:30 my time, 11:30 Eastern Time. My phone started to blow up, and I was like, what's going on? And I was informed that my husband was assaulted by Lieutenant Crystal Lancaster in the D.C. jail. And I immediately, I know who my husband is inside and out. We've been together for 14 years, never had a strike on his record, never been in trouble before, and I'm like, what is going on here? This just doesn't sound right. And I was informed that he went out in the morning to get his morning medication. He was 25 feet from his cell to the medication cart. And so he did not have a mask on. And talking about that, when you're in jail and you take medication, you have to prove to the officer that you took your medication right there. So you're not going to have a mask on anyway. He walked over to the medication cart to get his meds. And Lieutenant Lancaster yelled at him for not wearing a mask. And sprayed him with OC spray. So what we know pepper spray as, OC spray is much more lethal. And so she sprayed him with OC spray, then told the correctional officer that was watching the pod to handcuff him. When they handcuffed him, she started to assault him and sprayed him again with OC spray directly in his face, about a foot away from his face.
Now, is that, I mean, this seems to me to be a little bit, well, I mean, is this a violation of procedure? Someone shows up, well, you know, they're not taking, they don't have a mask, they're taking medication, and you don't warn them, you just start blasting them with this spray. I mean, is this allowed?
No, it's not allowed. It's actually, the funny thing to me is these men that are in there, there's 27 of them in the C2B pod. They are faced with years of imprisonment for using pepper spray on January 6th. And yet you have a lieutenant who knows better, who's worked her way up in the command system, that has now done the same assault to one of the inmates who was handcuffed at the time.
So it's unprovoked. He wasn't posing any kind of a threat. And his violation, if it was not wearing a mask, how does spraying somebody deal with that. You know, it just seems to me to be a kind of wanton brutality. But I've heard other reports that some of these, you know, jailers are given a kind of green light to abuse the prisoners because they're seen as, you know, politically on the wrong side. So kind of have your way with them. How did you find out about this incident? How do you get information about what's happening inside confinement?
So they have tablets that they are allowed to use for a few hours a day that we as the family pay for, where they're able to watch podcasts, watch TV. They're allowed to message through an app that it's like texting, but it's through an app. And I had several inmates reach out to me on the tablet and said, hey, we just want to let you know what happened, because they have a grievance system, an online grievance system that's broken. So these men know they need to write down what happened immediately before time goes on. So there was three other men that were involved in the incident. They came to my husband's aid, and they just verbally told Lieutenant Crystal Lancaster to stop assaulting my husband. And they have now tried to charge them, the other three men as well.
Now, you say that this woman, Lancaster, has actually been disciplined herself. She's been restricted by the prison itself and in some ways told to stay out of this area. What you're actually asking for is, hey, listen, let's see the footage of what happened. Let's see photographic evidence of your husband and any kind of injuries he might have sustained. So you're demanding a kind of accountability. Are you hopeful that you're going to get it?
To be honest with you, it's very hard to deal with. He's considered a U.S. Marshal detainee, even though he is in a D.C. jail. And it's very hard to get any type of movement with them. But yes, I am demanding action to look into this. I know who my husband is. I have asked for just very openly say, hey, send over the footage. Like, let's see it. You cannot deny video evidence before you move forward.
I want to close. We are going to put up a Give, Send, Go for your husband on the screen. But you also gave, Debbie, the Give, Send, Go's for some of the other guys. I'm assuming these are the people who came to the rescue or the defense of your husband. There's Ryan Nichols. His Give, Send, Go is G26NF. Ronnie Sandlin, Give, Send, Go /Patriot Prisoner. And Bart Shively, Give, Send, Go /G39XW. So I want to urge people to help because, I mean, I'm sorry to say, Sarah, these are people who have been, in some ways, I think, done badly by their own side. And there are even many Republicans, I think you'll agree with me on this, you're nodding, who have tried to look the other way because for whatever reason, this is an issue that they are a little scared of. But you strike me as a brave person. Thank you very much for coming on the podcast. And also thank you for hanging in there in what I'm sure is a very tough time. I really appreciate it.
Yes, thank you so much for having me on.
Imagine the lifelong impact of a journey to the Holy Land. Surrounded by like-minded travelers, picture yourself stepping foot in iconic locations right out of Scripture. Join Dr. Sebastian Gorka and Dinesh D'Souza on this life-enriching Israel tour, November 30th through December 9th, 2022. For more information, call 855-565-5519 or visit standwithisraeltour.com.
I've been talking about the Homeric concept central to the Odyssey of xenia. Xenia meaning hospitality, but hospitality not as a kind of voluntary act of charity, but rather as a kind of obligation, as a kind of protocol enforced really by the gods. And we begin to see xenia in the very beginning of the Odyssey. The opening scene is Athena showing up in Ithaca. And when she shows up at the palace, what does she see? Well, she's disguised, first of all. She's disguised as a man. She's disguised as an old friend of Odysseus named Mentor. And by the way, this is where we get the word mentor. A mentor is a kind of advisor, a kind of older companion. So Athena comes disguised as an old man, and she sees these suitors, and they are all over the place in the palace, and they're mixing wine, they're eating plates of meat, they have killed cattle, And there's Telemachus, Odysseus' son, a young man, probably around 20 years old, but really pretty immature. He seems like he's more like 15 or 16. And he's looking very despondent because he's overwhelmed by these, well, it turns out 100 or so suitors, and they're just having the run of the place. Now, here's Homer. He was the first to see Athena there, Telemachus. He disapproved of leaving strangers stranded, so he went straight to meet her at the gate. So this is Telemachus showing an awareness as a host of Xenia. He needs to be hospitable. Here's someone who needs help. He goes up to her. Now it says, he shook her hand and took her spear of bronze. Inside the high-roofed hall, he set her spear beside a pillar in a polished stand. So here's a very interesting little detail. What is Telemachus doing? Well, he's kind of disarming, in a literal sense, his guest, taking away her spear. Now, I say her. It's Athena, as we know, although disguised as a man. Telemachus thinks he's talking to an old friend of his dad. And then it says that Telemachus offered her a meal. And only then, only after she is fed and rested, do they begin to talk. And Athena introduces herself as a friend of her dad. Athena says, "Wow, you look a lot like Odysseus." And I'm not quoting Homer. "Your handsome face and eyes resemble his. We often met and knew each other well before he went to Troy." And then Telemachus answers in a very cautious way. This shows that Telemachus really recognizes that he is in a little bit of an uncertain position with a newcomer. Let's remember what I said earlier, which is that the word xenos refers to a stranger, a foreigner, an outsider, but also a friend. And the way that Xenia works is when you show up, as in this case, Odysseus has never seen this individual before. He's never met Mentor or Athena disguised as Mentor. And however, having fed the guest and, you know, having sat him down, now, in a sense, the guest becomes a friend. A friend not in the sense of a buddy, someone you've known for a long time, but someone whose relationship is now altered because they have taken advantage of your hospitality and they derive certain obligations from that. But here's Telemachus replying to Athena, replying to Mentor. Telemachus says, "My mother says that I am his son, but I cannot be sure since no one knows his own begetting." Now, this is a very subtle point that Homer's planting here, and I think very important because it's going to help us understand something that's going to come up later in the Odyssey, a kind of a sexual double standard in which absolute fidelity is expected from women, namely Penelope, Odysseus's wife, and apparently not from Odysseus, at least not in certain ways. And the question is, why is that? Why do you have this double standard? Is it just, you know, sexism? And Homer's answer is, no, it actually has something to do with the begetting of legitimate children. And so here's Telemachus saying, you know, I believe I'm Odysseus' son, and you're saying I look like him, but, you know, I can't be sure. I was there, but I was obviously only a newborn baby. And then Telemachus begins to open up to Athena, open up to Mentor, and sort of disgorge how angry he is at these suitors and how the suitors are violating Xenia. They're sort of, as Telemachus says, they are sort of eating his estate, and they're giving nothing in return. So here is Telemachus framing his complaint very much in terms of Xenia. And Athena gives him two pieces of advice. Number one, she says, you need to call a council of the men of Ithaca and publicly denounce the suitors. And number two, you need to go on a journey and you need to visit Nestor in Pylos. That's where Nestor is from. And then you need to visit the man who came back last from the Trojan War. That happens to be Menelaus. Menelaus and Helen were the last ones to return. They live in Sparta. You need to go to Sparta and ask if there's any news about your dad and about your dad returning. Do they know whether your dad is alive or not? Now, Athena knows perfectly that Odysseus is alive because, remember, Athena has gone to Zeus and said, we need to get Calypso to release Odysseus so he can go home. So Athena knows. But the reason Athena is holding back, not disclosing what she knows, is she wants young Telemachus to, you may say, become a man. She wants him to start acting his position. She wants him to take responsibility. She wants him to take initiative. So her point is, you denounce the suitors, you get on a ship, you go visit Nestor and Menelaus, you find out what your situation is, so you will know how to act, which is to say, you will know what to do.
Subscribe to the Dinesh D'Souza podcast on Apple, Google, and Spotify, or watch on Rumble, YouTube, and SalemNow.com.